Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Nick Curto Presents the Disclosure Network. Greetings and welcome, Nick Curto.
Thank you very much, Hercules. It's been quite an exciting time lately, as you well know,
yes.
And we're going to get very much into that this evening.
I'm looking forward to learning all about the Lower Alloways Creek incident.
a lot more beyond that, too. So, all right, well, let's get started then. This is, as Hercules said, this is Nick Curto Presents the Disclosure Network, and I'm Nick Curto, co-founder and director of Disclosure Network New York. And I host this live podcast, and DNNY is a grassroots organization now celebrating our 20th year. I can't believe it's been that long, but it has, of providing two meetings a month throughout the year in Manhattan. We focus on cutting-edge UFO, ET issues, paranormal phenomena, as well as many important and highly related subjects from a wide variety of areas and sources as we go deep into these exciting and sometimes quite misunderstood subjects that the mainstream press will seldom even talk about or ever fully disclose. Now, our members do intensive investigative research into these various cutting-edge topics, and they share that information with the group at our meetings and with our internet followers on YouTube. We are now currently doing only Zoom meetings twice a month until COVID-19 is gone. And hopefully forever, and the venue that we hold our meeting face-to-face in the West Village of New York City reopens. Our Zoom meetings are for members only and are held the first and the third Wednesdays of each month throughout 2021. And it starts at 7 p.m. and usually goes for 90 minutes. Now, if you'd like the details to become a DNNY member and take advantage of these meetings, which are quite extraordinary, if I do say so myself, you can do that by just emailing me, and I will give you that detailed information on the return email. So if you get a pen and a piece of paper, I will give you my email address. Okay, here we go. NICKNYNY1. And it's not O-N-E, it's the numeral 1, @gmail.com. Again, NICKNYNY1, @gmail.com. And I will get right back to you with that information. And you can be part of our amazing group of people, researchers, and people that are just very interested in the subject. Our motto right from day one is, quote, connecting the dots to seek truth, unquote. We have available to all of our members a daily DNNY News Blast email service, and that focuses on the most important topics of special interest. People have said that it's one of the best news blasts they have ever seen and get, and they rely on what we produce every single day. And if I do say so myself, it is as cutting edge as it gets. Our website, I should mention that, is dnny.info. That's dnny.info. And that will also give you a brief picture of what we are about. We look forward very much to having you aboard. It's a great group. I'm very proud of this group, for sure. We've been working together on many projects. And these researchers are as cutting edge as it gets. It's a thrill to know them and to work with them. Okay, with that said, my featured guest for this live podcast tonight is a dear friend and colleague, Robert Earl White. Welcome, sir. Robert, are you there?
He must have been disconnected. Let me reconnect him.
Okay.
I hear you.
Okay. Oh, there you are. Hi,
me?
Robert. Welcome.
Yep.
Welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thank you, Hercules and Nick. I'm glad to be here. It's a great privilege
And for most of the viewers, I know that I've talked with you before, but my name's Robert Earl White. I'm a content creator. I have a YouTube and a TikTok. I also am a disclosure advocate. I work on digging up the history of the UFO phenomena. And for me, it started back in 1991, April 21st, around 10:18 p.m., when a UFO crashed behind my family's house in southern New Jersey in a small town called Lower Alloways Creek, not far, incidentally, from the nuclear power plant that was behind our house. The creek was a runoff from the nuclear power plant. As most UFO investigators already know, there is a connection with nuclear energy and these craft, and it has been seen all over the world. This case, the UFO crash, was covered up by the Men in Black, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard, because the Coast Guard patrolled the waterway near the nuclear plant. For 30 years, my family did not have proof, although it was on the Philadelphia News, the KYW 3-channel news. The Mutual UFO Network came out, did a bunch of interviews. They also came out at a later time, hypnotizing my mom and putting her under regression, where she continued to reveal this alien abduction phenomena. And, you know, and not all of her experiences were bad and things like that, but I'm just going over the brief of the story. And for a very long time, my family, we did not have evidence. And for about 30 years, we had no evidence. So unfortunately, when my mother or myself or anyone else involved would try to share this story, we were met with ridicule, laughter, rejection. About a year and a half ago, last June, I finally found 6 pages of articles filled with absolutely mind-blowing information, and that really set me on this path, Nick, where I was trying to not only find things that had to do with my case, but also find things that have to do with this area, really trying to get down to the bottom of it. And although my family, we knew what happened, we knew our experiences, there was many witnesses, you know, many people were involved. But seeing the evidence after so many years, it actually opened up many doors. After I found the evidence, I made a documentary, which is on my YouTube, Robert Earl White, Order of Light. You search that on YouTube, you'll find it there. I made part one of my documentary. After I did that, which in the documentary, I only read 3 pages out of the 6 articles that I found of evidence. I only read 3 pages of it, and I tell briefly the story from my family's perspective. After I did that, an outpour of other people that were involved in the area, people that witnessed this thing or knew something about it, started coming forward, and the rabbit hole started to get a lot deeper really fast. And in that search, it has led me to come across great people like you, Nick, and Joe Foster and George Filer. And, you know, it's really set me down this path, and we're starting to do this in this community where we're, you know, taking these isolated incidents and we're starting to connect the dots. And for too long in the UFO community, you know, these UFO sightings and incidents, they've all been in their own individual pocket. But when we start to put them together, it really starts to paint a larger picture of what is really going on. And from doing that, some of the things I have uncovered about my family's case, about my mother's extraterrestrial contact, about, you know, the nuclear plant and the history of UFO sightings that go back to that nuclear plant, even back to 1977. It was the first part of it was built in 1976. And I actually was privileged to have my good friend, Paul Evans Pedersen. He was a security guard for the nuclear plant back in 1977. and there was an unidentified flying object that was hovering over the nuclear plant. It set off all the radiation alarms for about 25 minutes. When the craft left, all the radiation alarms went off. Everyone was running around in a panic, wondering what was going on, and a bunch of guys saw the UFO hovering above the plant. The following day, the security team comes to work. After 10 minutes, they're called to the front. They're asked to hand in their guns and their badges, and they're asked to leave. And all of the security guys ask them, hey, what was going on last night? And the official explanation that they gave to them, it was a radioactive cloud of gas that came all the way from China and hovered only over our specific nuclear plant. And they let go the entire team. And before this security team, they went through four other security teams, and they've went through many other security teams. This is an ongoing phenomena. It's clearly a wall of secrecy where they're letting go entire security teams instead of, you know, informing them of what's going on. And this has been going on for a very long time. And I have found so much about my family's case, but recently I found an article from the Wilmington Tribune, and Wilmington is directly across the Delaware River from where the UFO crash was, directly across the river, and it's from 1860. It's from 1860, and from Wilmington heading southwest towards our area, they're describing a blue light followed by a bunch of red lights following it through the sky back in 1860. So I've been carefully cataloging all of the phenomena that has happened in this certain location. After I shared my story, George A. Filer, who runs the National UFO Center, he has the Filer Files, really awesome. He shared my family story, and in his records, he had a story of a pastor that was in the same area that saw a UFO interacting with the power lines coming from the nuclear plant. And he remained anonymous. George didn't give me his name, but for a pastor to come forward and, you know, make a claim like that, this phenomena in this area of, you know, Lower Alloways Creek here in South Jersey, it's a really big hot spot for sure, Nick. Do you have any questions?
Well, I have to say, Robert, that I have about 1,000 questions that I would really like to ask you tonight, and I know we don't have the time for that. I'm going to go back to the very beginning, and as I'm sure our listeners know already, you are amazingly intense about the details, about exploring, about the challenges of finding out the truth. And right off the bat, Robert, I got to say that you have my absolute best wishes for the truth search that you are doing, have been doing, and will be doing in the future. Good for you to be putting this all together. I really mean that, not only for you and your family, but for every single one of us. It's very important, and your story is incredibly amazing and very unique on many levels. I want to ask you, way back when, your mom and you, do you have any other family that were living in that house?
The time of the incident? I can go over the exact moment. That's brief. So it was April 21st, 1991, around 10:18 p.m., we lived out in the middle of the nowhere. So we had a creek behind our house. To the left, there was a bunch of marshland, a lot of foxtails, and single road. And there was a single lane old bridge. This is where the UFO crashed. And it was a one car at a time old wood bridge with tar on top of the wood. And there was a tree line directly beyond that tree line. That was our house. And directly next door, there was also my aunt's house. My aunt, who was 38 at the time, I believe mm-hmm. she was 38. And my mother, who was at home, and which was technically our grandparents' house, my mother was 22 years old. She was also with her two girlfriends watching the Phillies baseball game. I was upstairs because it was 10:18 p.m. I was upstairs, but my bed was up against the window. So obviously heard some of the commotion. I was a little late to the party, as you would say, but I still saw it happen. But this is exactly what happened around 10:18 p.m. My aunt that was directly next door, she was getting ready for bed. She went to the bathroom. Out of her back bathroom window, she noticed something. Now, to keep this in mind, it was raining the night of the incident. In the reports, it said cloud coverage was around 1,200 foot. So this thing was under 1,200 foot, right? And it was raining that night, and this thing was maybe a telephone pole or maximum two telephone poles above the tree line. And she saw this elongated triangular black object with three blue lights as the points of this elongated triangle and a very strange white light coming from the center of it, hovering completely still and completely silent. As my aunt is watching this for a little while, she says, I need to call Beth Ann, my mother. She goes over, she walks back into her bedroom, picks up the landline, calls my mom. My mom's watching the baseball game with her two girlfriends. She hears the phone in the kitchen ringing. The kitchen was the back of the house. My mother walks over to the phone. She picks it up. It's my aunt. She says, Beth Ann, look out the back window. There's something out back. So my mom, she's looking. She goes, oh, my God, I see it. At that point, the other two girls hear the commotion. They go running over. What is it? And they're all looking at this thing. They're all watching it. And I start to hear a little commotion. But then all of a sudden, red and orange sparks start shooting all out of this thing, followed by this super bright white flash of light. And this thing, like, imploded into itself and exploded at the same time. And just shot directly straight to the ground as fast as you could possibly imagine. And after they witnessed that, my mother instantly hung up the phone. She called 911. She obviously did not say it was a UFO because she knew people would think we're crazy. She says some sort of aircraft just exploded behind her house. Everyone was pretty shook up to see something so large, so low, explode, and, you know, and it being silent and not looking like anything we've ever seen, it was a lot to handle. She called 911, reported that. 10 minutes later, the police came, took an initial report from my mom, went to my aunt's house. 25 minutes later, two black cars pull up to the house. Out of the one car, a gentleman in Air Force attire, and out of the other one, two gentlemen wearing black suits and black hats, no sunglasses, little bits of facial hair. They come inside. My mom, you know, just thought they were with the government and that this was some sort of government craft or something like that, and they just needed to know what happened. So, of course, she lets them in. No one was thinking UFOs or anything like that. And they walk into our living room, and they have my mother and her two girlfriends sit down on the couch. There's a coffee table there. The men in black pull out a notepad and a pencil, and they ask the three girls to draw three different kinds of extraterrestrials. At that point, my mom's two girlfriends started laughing, cracking up. It was getting later at that point. And they said, you two girls can go ahead and leave. And they didn't really understand what was going on. We were backwoods people, closed-minded, very religious. No one ever thought about aliens or anything like that. And they went ahead and left. And it turns out the gentleman that was with the Air Force was actually trained in hypnosis and regression therapy, which they use for soldiers for post-traumatic stress disorder to get intel about extreme intense situations in combat. And they did a really, really brief regression therapy with my mother, and the two men in black stood in the corner of the room where they were doing it. And it was very brief, no longer than 5-10 minutes at most. But unfortunately, my mother revealed a little too much. You know, she was reliving for the first time, keep this in mind, reliving her abduction experience. And unfortunately, her first time reliving it was in front of these people that would use it against her. And that's essentially what happened. After this brief regression, the men in black asked my mother, do you have any questions? At this point, they already know. And, I'm sorry, I forgot a huge part. Going back, when they asked for my mom and her two friends to draw three different kinds of extraterrestrial, my mom ended up drawing three different kinds of extraterrestrial. That's what led to the hypnosis and regression to begin with. She drew a blue, she drew one she called Nordic, and then she drew one that she called, you know, grays, tall whites, whatever, you know, and that was that, and that's what prompted that regression therapy. And after that, the men in black said, hey, do you have any questions? My mother said, that's right, I had to think of them. The first question my mother said was, are these things dangerous? And keep in mind, my mom just relived all of this up till that regression point. Other than waking up with strange scars and having strange dreams, my grandmother would always dismiss everything as being imagination. You know what I mean? And you must have scratched yourself or this or that. So it was a lot. And my mother's first question was, are these things dangerous? The men in black said, if they were dangerous, do you think we would still be here? My mom said, okay, thank you. It makes sense. My mom had a second question. She asked them, why don't people know about these things? The men in black said, we're doing everything we can by preconditioning people. Within the next 10 years, you will see signs of extraterrestrials in books, movies, and all sorts of media. My mom says, okay, makes sense. And the third question my mother had for them after reliving this experience and actually realizing that she is being taken by beings against her will, you know, it's shocking. And all of her questions make sense from a mom's point of view, 22-year-old single mom, you know. And the third one was, when these beings are taking me, what would happen if something happened to my baby, me, or my elderly grandfather who was also there and she took care of him? And these things have me out somewhere and I'm not here to be for them. And this is the only time the men in black admitted to anything. Everything else, they just answered really brief, very vague, open-ended statements. You know what I mean? But at this point, after my mom's question, they said they use small grays that stay behind. And if anything was to happen to your son or your grandfather, they would have you back. And the men in black snapped their fingers. And the way they snapped their fingers, it was like they learned how to do something us human beings know how to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It wasn't normal. It was arrogant. And that was that. And my mom said, okay, I understand. The men in black said, do you have any other questions? My mom said, no. They said, okay, tomorrow, many UFO investigators, news agencies, newspapers are going to come out here. And you will say it was a helicopter, or we will take your son away. My mother said, okay, I understand. And that's exactly what she did.
So they're saying that if she were to say the truth, that they're saying, they're threatening and saying, we will take your son, which is you, away. That's a threat.
Exactly. And a 22-year-old single mother. And my aunt next door had her daughter was 1 year older than me. Directly next door, she was also a single mother.
So before this incident happened, the years before, did you or your mom or anybody else in the house or your relatives, did they have any real keen interest in any of this, the UFO and all of that? Did they really have an interest in that, read books on it, or did they have absolutely no interest? I'd be curious.
No interest, extremely religious. If it's not Jesus, it's not worth talking about kind of area. We were farming folk, you know, very backwoods people. But it's ironic because my grandmother, at a later point, to jump forward, MUFON came out a few different times. And my mom had a scar on her arm. And ironically, her grandmother had the same scar in the same area. And this scar was one of the, you know, scars from her childhood, waking up and noticing it was there. And my grandmom just thinking she scratched herself. But these beings, you know, after my mom's regression therapy and stuff, she came to the realization that these beings have been taking her since she was a baby. And ironically enough, and that same grandmother that had that marking, my grandmother is a twin and she had a lot of siblings. And in that house, they always used to talk about a man. They lived right next to a cemetery, but they would talk about a man with a top hat that would come to the window and come try to talk to them. But they always kind of just, they're very religious people, and things they don't understand, they just suppress it. And although they went through it and maybe once before they've talked about it, they act like they don't remember, you know, like deep, deep suppression. They're, like I said, if you're not talking about Jesus, you know, it's nothing that important. And that was kind of like the mentality of the town. And it was really hard, you know, on my mom, and especially with the threats. And she gave a lot of information to the Mutual UFO Network. She really did, in the articles, but only as much as she could. And the same thing with the reporting. There's a lot of weird things that are kind of left out and mysterious that don't really make sense in the report. And I truly believe that they were trying to protect my mother. I'm pretty sure my mother probably told MUFON that, you know, two gentlemen and an Air Force gentleman came there. So they knew that they had to report about this in a allegedly kind of way. And ironically enough, are you familiar with Bud Hopkins and Richard Butler?
Oh, very much so. Absolutely, yes.
Well, Richard Butler was involved with my UFO case, and he was giving the information to Bud Hopkins, okay? Now, the same two gentlemen that were harassing them and Linda, you know this story. You know what I'm talking about.
I
personally believe, I believe those are the same two gentlemen that snuffed my case out. Then they went after the same people working on my case, Richard Butler, Michael Talpaz III, but mostly Richard Butler and Bud Hopkins. I think my mother's case was going to be like the Linda Cortell, except we had a UFO crash and many witnesses, you know? And I think the same men that were in our living room, I truly believe they're the ones that stomped out and ended their careers and finally got them to shut up about the Linda Cortell case. Which, once again, I believe it's all connected. All connected.
Oh, I do too. I do too.
And I know that's a local case. That's a local case to you.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I've been to, I'm happy to say that I've been to a couple of Bud Hopkins meetings way back when, and I found it to be quite an authentic, very, very interesting and in-depth guy that was searching for the truth always. And it was a privilege to be at his meetings. I'm so sorry that he is no longer with us and he is deceased, because he was such a source of so much information and a constant, the constant challenges that people face when something like this, something extraordinary, happens to regular people, and how to deal with that, how to try to ascertain what really happened by regressive hypnosis and so forth. This is all fascinating. Did your mom, during the course of the years that you and her were together, did she say what was going on when she was abducted? Was it medical experiments? Did she ever bear a child? I have no idea. Do you have any information about
Absolutely.
What she was relaying to you?
Absolutely. So in the order that I learned this information, obviously I was much older, And I'll kind of give you a walkthrough of how she explained these things to me, because when all this happened, I had a lot of nightmares. I was 4 years old. I was just at the age where you start to understand reality, and then you have something like that dropped off on you. It was a lot, to say the least, but I was a quiet kid, so it didn't really bother me too much anyway. But long story short, most of it came out during these regressions. That first regression that the gentleman from the Air Force, then at a later time, the Mutual UFO Network, within like the months following, came out two separate times and did regression hypnosis with her. And the things she revealed were absolutely mind-blowing. Now, here's the thing. They have those. They have those. Someone was recording it, and I've been trying really hard to find these recordings, but I can't find anyone that I'm looking for or any sort of evidence except for what the evidence I did find, and that I'm thankful for it, but I would love to have those tape recorders. Also, the show.
Oh, you bet. Oh, my goodness. What that would have, what information that would have, would be so important. I hope that somehow you can get that.
Yeah. Also, the show Sightings or Unsolved Mysteries. It could have been both of them or one or the other, but they were both pretty popular shows. They came out and they did a regression hypnosis therapy on my mother. But, like, all this evidence, the tape recorders, also when they would be doing these regression therapies, my baby monitors would start going crazy, start going off the walls, going off the charts. And they had pictures, these alleged UFO investigators that were outside taking photographs. I don't even know what they had on the photographs or what they found. But there's so much, and everything was scrubbed. My mom's thing never made it to air. Although she signed the waivers for them to use her regression, you have to do paperwork before, they release stuff. And she did. I think they were going to blur her face out and just use her regression, And they never ended up using her things. And I think the same Men in Black kind of went along cleaning it up, and I truly believe the same two gentlemen that were harassing Bud Hopkins and Richard Butler and Linda Cortell, I believe they're the same gentlemen. I really do.
One thing that you're saying here that's ringing a bell for me is that people that I've talked to in our group, Disclosure Network New York, and also myself, have done interviews with fairly prominent newspapers and magazines, and none of it ends up being aired. I've done videos. They have done videos. They have talked to reporters, done audio stories about what they have been through, and we're thanked by the reporters, like, this is great, thank you for this, and then nothing ever happens. They don't appear in the newspapers, magazines, or on television. This is, I think, part of this plan to block all of this information.
Yeah, because think about, why would they waste their time coming out, interviewing you, taking the shots, to not use it? That don't make sense.
They want to
get
what you know, but then they'll probably put it in a secret file, but then they'll never put it to, and they make you think that it will be, but it never is.
Exactly. And go back to my mother's experiences real quick.
Sure, please.
Like I said, I learned it at a different age, and I'll get to that. When I was a kid, she told me, look, honey, extraterrestrials are real. They won't hurt you. They're here. They won't bother you. They're doing their own thing. And UFOs are real. And that's kind of how it was broken down to me. And my mom had, like, for the Octorians, she called them the Blues. The Little Zetas, she would just call them Little Zetas. the tall whites, which were more of the hostile ones, you know, she called tall whites. The blondes, she called Nordic. She had really happy, safe, friendly names, you know, the snakes, the reptilians, things like that. And it was interesting seeing some of my mother's hypnosis and regressions through people that were there and hearing what they said about my mother revealing. But when I got older, my mom started to fill me in. And a lot of times she was basically a part of the hybrid program where these beings would basically extract her eggs, do something with it, abduct her again later time, and put eggs inside of her, put like a upgraded embryo. I don't know. They would send her back. She would be abducted again. Then they would take that out and put it into like some sort of jar, if you want to call it that. And throughout time of this happening over and over again, this process of removing embryos and putting them back inside of her, eventually in a short time, I don't know how they do it, but these specimens grow really, really quick. They're not like a normal human being. They grow really, really quick. And later on, my mother would see her children, and she would be on this table and off to the side. You know,
wait, when you say see her children, are you saying see her children that were part alien? Is that what you're saying here?
Yes, yes. And I will describe what they look like. But she would see them standing over to the side, and she would see a taller, you know, the tall whites generally, taller, very light-skinned gray extraterrestrials, very tall, very light-skinned. That's why they call them the tall whites. And they would be standing in the background, and the children would be standing there. And some of them had, like, red, the blondish sort of hair. Some of them didn't have hair. It was all very. Some of them looked more human than others. Some looked really deformed, almost like Sloth from the Goonies. Some of them looked really, really deformed. Others look like that perfect mix of gray extraterrestrial mixed with human being. And it was a lot for my mother. And, I mean, even outside of her abductions, she would always talk about her babies, missing her babies, because she can never interact with them.
I was going to say, did they ever show her any warmth or any connection in any way? Did she ever say anything about the her, quote, babies, unquote, as showing when they saw her face-to-face? Did they ever communicate in any way or show warmth or anything like that? Did they know who she was?
They did, but it was through telepathy. And they would be standing off near the side with the taller ones behind, and they would just be kind of standing there, like looking at her in a way that like they're observing her, you know, and they would be communicating telepathically. And, you know, in my mom always said it, she would always tell them, can I please have one? Can I please have one? And they said they can't survive on Earth. And she's like, please, please. So there was a connection there. And, you know, my mother was under the impression that they want this interaction because they're trying to create beings that, you know, have what a lot of them don't, and that emotion. So they're trying to, you know, make their species a little bit more like us in a way, you know.
I've heard things like that before with other people in other incidents, and that seems to be running true, that we have qualities, and you're saying one of them would be emotion, love, other kinds of qualities, and some of these beings seem to be absent from that. Other beings don't have the muscle in their bodies. They're more skeleton looking, like they've, like many generations, they have lost some of those qualities that we still possess here on this planet. And I've heard mm-hmm. stories like this. So what you're saying here really does parallel very much like some other experiences. And one thing I have to say too, Robert, is that to me, your mom is being, I would say, incredibly generous with her feelings, because an abduction experience is not a nice, not a fun thing. It's a very scary when you lose your sense of controlling your own body. Your free will is put on hold, and that's a very scary thing. So when your mom over the years has actually been, I would say, friendly to what was going on with her, which had to be against her will at the beginning, for sure. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary, just that alone. Wouldn't you think?
She always said, now, for most people, it's absolutely traumatizing. I'm not trying to play it, and my mom never had the free will of it. So you're absolutely right. The free will wasn't there, but I promise, I swear to you, my mom always told me, not once was she ever afraid, and not all of her experiences were with her babies and the tall whites, which the tall whites are known to be a little bit more hostile, and ironically, they're not really known to do hybrid programs, which makes the whole situation even a little stranger. They're normally not the ones that are behind that. They have other alternatives and motives, and I don't understand that. But my mother, because my mother was in contact with these mercenaries, the tall whites are mercenaries, there were other extraterrestrials that had to get involved, and they would really deliver a lot of positive stuff to my mother, like the ones she called the Blues. A lot of people call them Arcturians, coming from the Arcturian mm-hmm. star system. They were, you know, some of the most spiritual, loving, amazing beings that she ever encountered. Same with the Nordics. And she even, during the day after the crash, in the interview that MUFON did, she was talking about a dream she had the night before the UFO crash. And listen to this. She had a dream, and this is in the MUFON article as well. It's all written out. She had a dream that she woke up and she was walking out to a half-wooded area where she saw 3 to 4 hamster cages with lights going all around them, or eyes, you know? And out of them came 3 to 4 upright, walking in unison, mongooses walking towards her. And there was also 2 large snakes, and she felt like she was protecting the snakes from the mongooses.
Really? Wow.
Now, this is her strange dreams before regression. And then when she did the regressions, you know, we found out what those things really are. And even George Filer, he put it together. He's like, and so did the UFO reporter. Mongooses, if you look at them when they're standing upright, there's a large resemblance to small gray extraterrestrials. Also, some species of small grays are actually, you know, they're hive-minded. They all work as one. They literally do the same motions together. And I thought that was really fascinating. And then, you know, obviously the snakes, you know, reptilians, unfortunately, they're an actual species, unfortunately, and they're out there. And, you know, she, for some reason, to many species, they had an interest in my mother. And I think the only reason these other positive ones got involved was to try to stop what these other ones were doing. Those same tall whites, the crafts that they use, are exactly what my family and what we saw behind our house. I truly believe that the craft that was behind our house belonged to the species known as the Kili Tokort, which they come from the Vela star system. They're mercenaries. They're a part of the Orion Empire, all that stuff. And I truly believe that another craft, another being, took out that UFO behind our house. Remember when I described this bright white flash? I believe it was some sort of light craft that actually took this craft out. Like this other craft must have been interfering with it, which caused the red and orange sparks, you know, like a static interference, microwaves. And then this white flash, you know, and those balls of light, they can move so quick, these, you know, whatever they are. And I really believe that whatever was back there was stalking my mother, you know, for something. And I have a very strong feeling, plus the nightmares I've had, I'm somehow connected to whatever went down. I was the youngest soul in the area. And so whatever went down there, if it had any sort of anything, it, you know, I don't know if that explains the dream, but sometimes I think that the very last memories of that being somehow got attached to me. But I think that's what was going on. And I think the Arcturians, maybe Palladians, I'm not sure, but judging by the species my mom talked about, I would imagine it would have been one of those. I believe they took them out because that species isn't supposed to be doing some of the things they're doing. The genetic to some of these species, my mom was just genetic material, and to other species.
I think the theory that you're saying right now makes a great deal of sense to me, and I think it would to the members of our group also, that what you're saying here, that there is a balance going on, and there are good, wonderful, loving beings that really are there to protect and educate us. I do believe that, and there's also other beings that are just the opposite of that, and I think that there is a balance and a check system, and I think what you're describing is the big picture of what was going on. It just sounds to me that that was happening and that there are rules across the universe about how to treat other beings in other planets and other realms. And if that's broken, there is something to pay, a consequences. And it sounds to me, from what you're saying, there was a balance going on here right from the beginning.
Absolutely. And that goes back to what you and I were talking about before with Stephen Greer and Luis Elizondo, the narrative kings. Luis Elizondo, the UAP task force, they're playing the extreme threat narrative. Then you have Stephen Greer, and he's playing all of these things are positive, and they're not doing abductions, and the only one doing bad things are the military complex. And, you know, I tell people all the time, both Stephen Greer and Luis Elizondo, they're both right, and they're both absolutely wrong. And both of them are playing an extreme narrative, and they don't want to give ammunition to the other side. So they're missing out on the main point that there is a duality, a plurality in the universe, and that's just the way it goes.
I agree with that. I think that that's the big picture, and I think that as time goes on, we're going to learn much more about that and about the rules that are in place and have been in place for many millions of years about how other civilizations are treated. So this is absolutely fascinating material. It just is.
Oh, and there's so much more. And for the most part, you know, my mom's experiences, especially with that, and there was other experiments going on with her as well, testing. And unfortunately, not having people to talk about this phenomena, you know, my mom finally found a way to make this stop. It was happening so much, it was really becoming stressful to her. And in my later years, around when I was about 16 years old, my mother, at a young age, around when my mom was about 26 years old, she had her tubes tied. My mother would constantly bleed ever since she was 9 years old. That's also around the time where they started taking her embryos, and they were doing this so much to her. My mother would constantly bleed maybe 3 out of 4 months, weeks out of the month.
Woman. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
And, she had her lung drop at 26 years old, just her lung just randomly collapsed. which someone brought up a point to me, a really interesting point about, you know, her time that she could have been spending out in space, you know, mm-hmm. different pressures could have collapsed her lung. That's a very good point, which something I didn't realize until someone brought that up. But, and also more than that, my mom had her tubes tied. And when I was 15, one time she was in the bathroom crying, and I went in there. She was in there for about an hour and a half. I was concerned something happened. And
sure.
I looked in the toilet, and my mom had a miscarriage, and it wasn't human.
It wasn't human.
And this happened. She had 5 to 6 miscarriages that were unexplainable. And she found out that the only way that she could stop these abductions was by drinking alcohol, because then they wouldn't do these experiments because she had poison in her system.
Isn't that interesting? Wow. That is that's incredible. Yeah.
And,
you know, if I was writing a movie, Robert, based on what you said, which is incredible details, I mean, considering the stresses that you and your mom were under, if I was writing the movie of this, I would say that somewhere in the near future, you're going to hear something outside, and it's going to be a starship landing, and you're going to get a visit. And you know who's going to visit you? Your brothers and sisters from another world. Can you imagine? Considering what you said, sounds to me as
they can't come here. I want to so bad. You have no idea. That's why I look at it this. Those beings are the only pieces I have left of my mom. Because my mom drank to stop this phenomena, not having people to talk to, you know, she passed away a year and a half ago. She passed away 2 months before I finally found the evidence to validate her claims. And that's why I'm doing this, because unfortunately they can't come here. They might be able to, but they're not able to step off this ship. Their bodies cannot handle this planet. They're not set up for that, unfortunately. And it drives me crazy. Are they being used as a slave force? Are they just a genetic experiment? Are they already tossed? Are they okay? Are they alive? Are they dead? I don't know, and I'm not going to stop until I'm off of this rock and I can see the only thing I have left of my mother. That's why I'm trying to make this closure happen, so I can have other friends come down and give me a ride to them so I can see them wherever they are.
Exactly right. I have to ask you a personal question that I don't know. Are you married, and do you have children?
I am not married, but I've been with my girlfriend for a long time. I do not have children, and I'm probably not going to have children. It's just something, I don't know, I'm trying to end this. I feel like I've been here for a while, and I'm ready to go back home. I'm trying not to leave. I don't want to leave anything behind. I want to go the same way I came in. Yeah, you know, I don't
interesting,
know. It's kind of my thing. Yeah.
And are you now a spiritual person yourself?
Yeah, I guess you would say that. I mean, I went to Bible college, became a pastor. I was doing that for many years, a youth pastor.
Okay.
Then I ended up going to the Middle East. I studied Islam and learned about ancient mysticism of Islam and Sufism. I taught
Good
English
for you.
Over there as well. And I
Good
also
for you.
Dabbled
My God,
in
that's great.
Sumerian.
You know, I have a friend. I have a couple of friends who've done things like that. Good for you, man. That's fantastic that you've reached out in your own life to seek other teachings. I give you a lot of credit for that. I really do. And now we're
I don't
coming
have
to the
a
end
religion,
of.
Though.
But well, you're, okay, but you're being spiritual, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That would be fair. Okay. We're coming to the end of the program, and before we go, I just want to ask, just very briefly, Robert, with a sentence or so, do you want to leave our listeners with any particular final thoughts that you might have for them?
Absolutely. in these days where we're hearing a lot of different things, you know, I want everyone to remember we are the disclosure. If you have an experience, don't hold it in until it's too late. So many people wait until their last moments to come out with their stories. This is the time to share your story. You will be on the right side of history. We are not wrong with this phenomena. This is the time, if you have a story, if you experience something, there are others out there, and you do not have to go through this alone. There are many people with your experience, and no one should have to go through what my mother went through and what so many other American citizens and other citizens in this world have had to go through because of the military complex agenda. It's wrong, it's immoral, and regardless of what the government says is disclosure, remember, true disclosure comes from the people, not the clowns in Washington. Remember that. And if you want that more information, contact me, Robert Earl White, on YouTube. You can find me there, also on Facebook. There we go.
Excellent. That is very wise words indeed. Hercules, how much more time do we have, sir?
We have around 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay. Well, Robert, what a pleasure. You certainly are a man that does connect the dots very, very successfully, and I admire your work very much. More speed to you. Keep very close to me and the group. You are always, always welcome on my podcast, and at the beginning of the new year, I'd like to do another podcast with just a slightly different agenda, which we will talk about and discuss, you and I. But there's so much to discuss and to know about, and you have really done a major step here to connect dots. And I just want to tell you how much not only me, but my group and the listeners appreciate all your good work.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And your email chain is absolutely great. I get a lot of good content from there.
Well, thank you
Love
for that.
It.
We're very proud of that. And as you know, every day we have major cutting-edge reports for the DNNY News Blast, and that is ongoing, and we've had a lot of good comments about that service. Well, anyhow, all right, so look at Robert. Much, much love to you, sir. This is Nick Curto for Disclosure Network New York, wishing you all an enlightened journey as you connect the dots to seek truth. Till next time. Keep informed, stay safe, and be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to you all. Take care. Good night.
Thank you, and take care to both of you. An excellent, excellent show. Thank you again very much, and thanks to our listeners. Whether you called in and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be found. bound by love and yet be free, but only.